Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we are talking about Tesla's decision to remove ultrasonic sensors. We've got a little bit more information on what that might be in terms of cost savings. We've also got a new safety feature that Tesla is integrating, some interesting comments from a Toyota executive, a few macro notes, a lot going on there today, and more. Starting off with the stock, Tesla today, a nice little outperformance. It's been a while, but up 0.3%, while the NASDAQ was down 0.1% on the day. So not a huge gain, but we'll take it. Tesla closing at $217.24 on the day after I think we had five down days in a row. So nice to get a little bit of a relief there. A lot going on with the macro today as we await the CPI report tomorrow. We did get the PPI report today. That is the producer price index. So the producer price index did increase 0.4% from last month. That compared with expectations for a 0.2% gain, but kind of a mixed report. If we look a little bit closer here at core, so removing food and energy, that was up 7.2% year over year. That was slightly below expectations of 7.3%. Month over month, up 0.3%. So in terms of core, although headline is important too, a 0.3%, that has been stable for the last few months. And if we look at the graph here, we can see that 0.3%, that would annualize to a little bit less than or somewhere around 4%, where if we're looking at the 0.4% headline number, that annualizes to 5%. So of course, the Fed is going to be looking for things to get down into more of the 0.1, 0.2 range, and we're seeing these maintain a little bit higher, and of course, a little bit higher than expectations here on the headline number. But again, a little bit of mixed results there in terms of expectations, with core coming in slightly lower. There's a lot of different ways that people look at PPI, so it's kind of hard to lock in on just one specific, you know, ahead of expectations or below. So that's why we're kind of talking about a few things there. But you can see year over year, this is held steady at 7.2% from last month as well. And again, 0.3% month over month. So we'll wait for the CPI report tomorrow. Core is expected to come in pretty high, 0.5% increase month over month, or up 6.5% year over year. That'll be probably more closely watched. Hopefully the PPI gives us a little bit more confidence in terms of where that's going to come in at, so that we don't see some huge overreactions tomorrow, but we'll have to see on that. The other thing that happened today, of course, the Fed minutes were released for the September meeting, and it's kind of a, I don't know, choose your own adventure scenario here, where some people can find things that they like in these minutes, some people can find things that they don't, and for me, I think it's just kind of a neutral, like I think it's the same stance that we've heard them reiterate in commentary since this meeting. Again, this is a couple weeks old at this point in time, but some people pointing to this note in here that says, several participants noted, particularly in the current highly uncertain global economic and financial environment, it would be important to calibrate the pace of further policy tightening with the aim of mitigating the risk of significant adverse effects on the economic outlook. It would become appropriate at some point to slow the pace of policy rate increases while assessing the effects of cumulative policy adjustments on economic activity, including inflation. So that's kind of what we talked about earlier this week with some of the comments made by Fed officials. Basically, I think this is the argument that a lot of people that are hoping for slower rate increases or more of a pause are looking for. Like, hey, you guys have made a lot of changes here. Give it some time and see how that's going to react. So the Fed commenting on that sort of reinforces that argument for that group of people. But then at the same time, you know, later on we can see here that they said that many participants emphasized that the cost of taking too little action to bring down inflation likely outweighed the cost of taking too much action. Several participants underlined the need to maintain a restrictive stance for as long as necessary, with a couple of these participants stressing that historical experience demonstrated the danger of prematurely ending periods of tight monetary policy designed to bring down inflation. So that's why I said it's kind of a, you know, choose your own adventure, take away whatever reinforces your pre-existing belief on this. Some good if you're looking for them to slow down, some bad if you're not. So again, I don't take too much away from that today. Again, we'll wait for the CPI tomorrow. That'll come out before market open. All right, so getting into the Tesla items for today. Monroe Live today released a video going through what they believe Tesla's costs are on the ultrasonic sensors. Of course, we had talked previously about how Tesla's made the decision to remove those, entirely convert over to Tesla Vision like they did with radar. Here, we can see the estimate for the ultrasonic part itself, the sensor itself. Monroe's estimating that at $8. So we had previously said, or I had previously said I had seen a range of $1 to $15. So right in the middle of that range, it's good to see. And they do say that in addition to that, there's maybe another 20% in additional costs from all the other components needed alongside the sensor, adding up to roughly $114 per vehicle. So they shared a nice video of the inside, or a nice look at the inside of the vehicle, where you can see it isn't just the sensor. You know, you've got a lot of cabling here connecting everything, brackets and mounts. So all this starts to add up, and that's that additional 20%. And then this is just part cost, right? You got to consider also the labor and the production process that it takes to get this installed. It doesn't look like the, you know, the easiest thing to install. You know, compare that to the cast components, and you can see why Tesla is trying to do things that eliminate this need. So if we look at the impact on the financials, this is going to add up to hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars over multiple years. So just to give an idea, looking at the first half of this year in context, Tesla delivered, you know, just over 500,000 vehicles. If you apply that $114 savings to each of those vehicles, just in the first half of this year, Tesla would have saved $64 million on that alone. And then I've also broken that out in terms of how that savings would impact auto gross profit, excluding regulatory credits, GAAP net income. So you can see with those adjustments how that would look just for the first half of the year here. That would actually improve auto gross profit ex credits by almost 1%, GAAP net income by over 1% for that period of time. If you look at it from a rate perspective or a percentage perspective, it adds 21 basis points to auto gross margin ex credits, 18 basis points to GAAP net income. So it's actually a pretty significant adjustment. I know those might sound small, but even one basis point ends up being somewhat significant when you're talking about the size of Tesla's business today. And again, this is just the first half of the year where we know Tesla had, you know, production issues. We should see Tesla, you know, easily be doubling this in the first half of next year, hopefully, or certainly in the second half of next year. And if we're talking a couple million vehicles per year, you're looking at, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of savings, a quarter billion there at that run rate. And as Tesla scales up to 5 million a year, 8 million a year, that'd get them to $1 billion per year saved from this change alone, and beyond that. And that's just considering the parts, not including the labor, not including the time that they're saving in production, things like that. So that's not to say that there aren't any downsides with this decision. Certainly we'll have to wait and see on that in terms of how quickly and how much parity Tesla does achieve with this change in terms of just going to Tesla Vision. So the jury is still out on if this is actually worth it, but it does present, you know, Tesla's case for why they would want to make this decision, because this is, you know, a pretty big deal. Elon has talked before about how even just finding, you know, pennies or dollars that can be saved in each vehicle adds up. And here they're talking about over $100 per car. So pretty big deal on that. And just wanted to kind of walk through the math because I was kind of curious how this would affect things as well. So hopefully that's interesting. Next year, we've got a new feature that Tesla has added. They've worked with a company called Emergency Safety Solutions. I think this is a relatively new company. They have announced today that Tesla is going to be partnering with them on a global agreement to deploy what they call their help system on Tesla models, initially in North America via over their software update. So what this is basically a redesign of the hazard system for vehicles that are stopped on the side of the road. You know, they show a quick video here. Let me play that quick. That can demonstrate how they're adjusting this. Normally hazards are relatively slow in terms of how often they're blinking. You can see here that this is what the help system does instead. So a much more rapid rate of blinking. To me, it looks a lot more similar to like a police siren would. It's a lot more attention grabbing, I think. So hopefully that increases safety. And then the other thing that they have done here is when you are in a circumstance where your vehicle is on the side of the road, it will send out communication to other vehicles' navigation systems that will let them know that, hey, there's a vehicle ahead that is stopped on the side of the road. Hopefully that gives those vehicles time to make an adjustment for that rather than relying on having to come into view or something like that. So if you ever use the Waze app, they have something like that already in place. Theoretically, this would integrate with that, although I'm not sure exactly what third parties they're integrating with yet. But hopefully at least like Tesla vehicle to Tesla vehicle, this would now be something that is integrated. So again, just as an over-the-air software update, but really nice to see Tesla do this because, you know, it seems like once you hear about it, kind of a no-brainer in terms of safety. And I think Tesla is the first passenger vehicle implementation of this technology. So exciting to see that. All right, other exciting news here. We've got an update in China. We had talked before about how the Model S and Model X had been granted permission for the purchase tax exemption in China for the new energy vehicle credit there. Or, you know, the purchase tax is different than the credit, but for that purchase tax exemption, we had seen a photo of a Model S there at Giga Shanghai. It looks like Tesla is pretty ready to start deliveries. Sounds like a couple of customers that had ordered the Model S and Model X have now been told to get ready for delivery and to pay the final payment. So sometimes that prep for delivery part, not necessarily a great indicator of when the delivery is going to happen, but I believe the final payment is more of a final thing. So it looks like delivery is starting there pretty soon for China, which makes sense. Tesla probably beginning this quarter exporting these from Fremont to Shanghai, or, you know, to China and to Europe, this being the first quarter of doing that. And then towards the latter half of the quarter, we'll probably see a little bit of a mini delivery wave for S and X, and they'll shift production back to focusing on the US deliveries. All right, next, just a quick update on a story we had talked about before. There was some questioning of if Tesla was installing specific software for the test procedures done by testing agencies. So the Euro NCAP, of course, just did testing on the Model Y. So that was a question that was raised. The Euro NCAP was investigating that because it was raised if there was, you know, specific software being used to cheat or improve results on those tests or anything like that. Euro NCAP investigations haven't revealed any evidence of that. I think, you know, not surprising at all to any of us. They say that these investigations aren't uncommon, but more high profile with Tesla than others have been. And they say that different regions, Europe, Australia, etc., may use different software and things like that. Again, no surprise. So what we might be seeing here is something that was added just because of Tesla's rollout to Australia and other places. So, you know, again, no surprise here. There's still some debate on what exactly this is. You know, some questioning about why there's not different stuff for Japan. Again, I don't really think this is something that's worth spending a lot of time on. But that's the results as we know them today. Next up here, we've got a report on Toyota. This is coming out of Australia. So one of Toyota's senior executives in Australia, getting everything mixed up here, recently had a presentation of one of Toyota's new hybrid vehicles and presented it, and then kind of went off script a little bit, according to this report here, and expressed some frustration with how Toyota is perceived in terms of their contribution to vehicle emission reductions. So, you know, he had a lot to say here. Toyota is not opposed to battery electric vehicles. We believe that to get to carbon neutrality, you have to take everyone on the journey. You have to have a solution for the market you're operating in. In the market we operate in, we believe right now that the solution is a diversity of products and powertrains. So what he's saying here in isolation does kind of make sense, right? Like, you can't really build a compelling electric vehicle right now for $20,000, $25,000. You know, you might be able to get something, but it's not going to be something that has the appeal that, you know, a Toyota Corolla or something like that would have. So Toyota's sitting here and saying, hey, we can't just electrify that segment instantaneously. It's not something that can be done today, so we're just doing hybrids. And from that perspective, like, that argument does make sense. But I think they're kind of, you know, with these comments and with their overall strategy, missing the forest for the trees a little bit, because, you know, they're sitting there and kind of using that as an excuse for not moving forward faster and better with fully electric vehicles, which eventually will move down into that segment. And then when that happens, Toyota's going to be, you know, caught off guard because they haven't been putting in the real effort. And I think that's the biggest complaint that people have with Toyota, isn't that they're doing some hybrids in segments that can't be quite electrified yet. It's that in the segments that can be electrified, like everything in their Lexus brand, they're not doing that. Everything that they've done so far has been half-hearted, hasn't been compelling. They've had issues with recalls. So that's where people are saying, hey, Toyota, like, you're not doing a good job with this. Not because they're doing some hybrids and talking about that. It's because their efforts on fully electric vehicles have been so poor. So, you know, it's never a great sign when you're sitting up there and having to defend to a group of auto journalists, like, you know, your corporate strategy, I guess. But, you know, it's kind of interesting to see that. And I think emblematic of probably the broader perspective within Toyota, which for them should be concerning. So he ends with, the point I'm trying to make here is, what are you seeing that I'm not seeing? Toyota's not stopping lagging or preventing electric vehicles. So hopefully, I don't know, maybe that executive will see this and realize that that's why people are being critical, not because they're doing hybrids. It's just the lack of effort in other areas. All right, next we've got an update on Lucid. They've announced their Q3 production. They've rebounded quite a bit here. I'll show the graph in a second, but they produced 2,300 vehicles nearly in Q3, delivered about 1,400. When production is so low at these levels, you know, maybe you're concerned about that split, but they should have plenty of orders to meet demand at this point in time. So really the focus should be on production. Here we can see how that looks. So Q2 was a major hit. They only produced about 670 vehicles. They lowered their guidance for the year, I believe, in Q2. That might have been in Q1, down to just 6,000 to 7,000. Had been, I believe, 12,000 before. So nice rebound here for Lucid. You know, huge progress over Q2, where they seem to have some significant issues. Looks like those are resolved. I think they need about 2,500 now for Q4 to hit that revised guidance, which, yeah, again, was lowered. But they do appear to be, again, on track for that after not appearing to be after Q2. So always kind of interesting to see what's going on there. And then we've got a new EV coming next year. This is the Polestar 3, kind of unveiled, and a lot more details given today by Polestar. There you can see what it is. I think they want it to be in the Model X space. I think it's more in the Model Y space. You can see the interior here. I think the interior actually looks pretty solid. And it looks like it could be a compelling vehicle. However, they're going to have some issues, I think, with the specifications. So just starting off with the price, they've chosen to price it at $84,000, which is a sort of a head-scratching move. They, you know, of course, the cutoff for SUVs for the Inflation Reduction Act EV tax credits, that's $80,000. So pricing your vehicle at $84,000 doesn't make a lot of sense in that context. Now, we do have some specs here. 0 to 60, 4.9 seconds on the low end, 4.6 seconds on the high end. Range, 300 miles for that lower speed version, 270 for the higher speed version. Both vehicles have a 111 kilowatt hour battery. So that's really the most concerning thing in here, I think. You know, you're only getting 300 miles of range using 111 kilowatt hours of battery. That's, you know, 10% bigger than a Model X. You're getting less range, even than a Model Y that's using, you know, 75, 80 kilowatt hours. So I don't know why this vehicle is so efficient. Even other vehicles that we've seen on the market from non-Tesla competitors seem to be a decent amount more efficient than this, than what we're seeing here from Polestar. And it's not like, you know, they're coming in with any amazing acceleration specs or anything like that. So that's concerning. And then not falling under the EV tax credit price here in the United States, also kind of a confusing move. This vehicle will be beginning deliveries in the fourth quarter next year, so about a year out from now. All right, that is it for today then. So as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you are subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast, and we'll see you tomorrow for the Thursday, October 13th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.